Good morning. Today is December 15th, 2016. This is the 9 a.m. County Administration Workshop of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners. We have all three commissioners here. We're going to begin with JJ from Human Resources. He has to leave this morning, so we will move him right through here. Item 1A, request for 4 job description changes, community development.
All right. So I actually have a number of job description changes. We'll start with the public health one, I guess, on top of my list. So public health has a position for healthy communities, tobacco education, and she would like to change that slightly. So it still does some of that, but she's going to work on getting her department accredited through a national accreditation process, and this position, on top of looking at tobacco cessation programs, will also go through that accreditation process and oversee it. So that pretty nominal, you know, changes as a result to no pay changes or anything like that. It's just more a greater focus on the totality of what the job will be through the accreditation process. And it'll probably be about a 3-year process to get it fully accredited. So that's that job.
Okay.
And then with community development, there are 4 position changes with community development. And the big genesis is you have 2 departments that have blended. And so well, I'll start with the building safety permit tech positions. So currently we have a tech 2 position. Oddly enough, we have a tech 2 but not a tech 1 in our current structure. And what we would like to do is we used to have an administrative position, and that position was vacated. And so building safety would like to, instead of having it be just an administrative function, they'd like that to be able to do some of the building tech work. Especially with all the marijuana regulation and stuff, there's a lot of permitting that needs to be done. And if you have an administrative person doing the permit stuff, they're kind of working out of class. So they'd like to reinstitute the Tech 1 position, which is lower than the Tech 2, and move it from a 0.6 to a full-time. And they have it in their budget to do that, and that will help push through a lot of the permitting associated with the increased marijuana sites, really.
Okay.
So those are the...
They had it within their budget because the position was vacated, but they are running a deficit every year, so it's within the scope of, you know...
Well, there's 2 things.
Surplus.
Yeah, they have some fee changes that'll help offset this, and they also believe there's a likelihood of some greater revenue in the future because of, you know, the permit process, you know, ends with some folks going out and that are higher level positions that are doing inspections and whatnot, and the early part of that work can be done by a tech lower level position instead of, you know, the inspector spending time with lower level work. So it'll actually make the position a little bit more, or the department a little more effective at getting their people out to revenue generating work, I guess. So that's kind of the thought on having 2 tech positions instead of just an administrative position and a tech position. And then the last one is the community development director is now in charge of building safety as the whole department. And so these last two changes reflect that. One is just noting that the director now oversees building safety, and then her primary admin person has changed some of her functions to where it used to be strictly planning, and now there's a lot of economic development work that position does, and coordination of the 3 divisions of community development, so economic development, building safety, and planning. And so we titled it office manager because it's managing the office administrative function of the 3 divisions. So those are the totality of all the changes.
Any questions?
I mean, everybody that is involved in this, meaning planning director,
mm-hmm.
they all are understanding this and supportive of these things and see the need for them to mm-hmm. be done and that kind of thing.
Yes, and for the 3 of these positions are union positions, and I've been in discussions with the union rep and the union folks, so there shouldn't be any conflict associated with the changes to those positions as well.
Okay.
There's a financial impact, so where is that coming from and who's it being appropriated to?
So the building safety financial impact is in their budget already with their ending fund balance. There is a nominal effect to the planning side. However, the intention, since planning is now not an autonomous department, that part of the director's salary will be charged to building safety because they're overseeing that function. So the effect to the general fund, at least throughout the end of this fiscal year, should be non-existent, should have no effect to the general fund change. For next fiscal year, it'll be up to her to decide how she wants to allocate her position. You know, should it be 90-10, 75-25, or whatever she wants to do. But that'll be reflected in next year's budget.
Yeah, that's going to be a decision the board's going to need to make between economic development, building and safety, and the planning department.
Yeah.
So it's an adjustment from an NU 23 to a 24
yes.
for her position. So is there a salary increase with that, or is it just the step?
It's classified as a reclassification,
mm-hmm.
and so it doesn't necessitate a salary step increase. So if it's a promotion, you get a two-step increase per our policy. If it's a reclassification, you go to the nearest but not less than step. So it'll be probably a tiny little bit more money, but not very much at all, have almost no effect, but it gives greater potential earning power to the position.
That's what I was interested in hearing, is that, you know, this position just acquired a pretty challenging department,
mm-hmm.
Some staff, and it although it dovetails, it's not going to be necessarily a walk in the park to manage all three programs. It is the way it's done in a lot of cities, but it's
mm-hmm.
kind of rare for a county to do it. I think Klamath County and Polk County do it this way, and I think there's some definite efficiencies, but it's really on the back of the director. The staff is still kind of focused on their specific issues. The director is the one covering three different programs and one department, and that's the challenge. So it has to be accommodated for that this person is picking up more of the slack, doing more with less again. And so it's reflected by just a one range increase.
Yeah.
And then they start out at an equivalent section in that range, where they start out at the bottom of the next?
So, to just make up numbers, so let's say they're at NU 23, step 7.
Yes.
You then would go to NU 24, step, like, 5 or 6.
Okay.
So it would be...
It's in the range of the... But you have the potential.
You have
and you have two more steps, and then you're kind of done until the... Okay.
So you have...
It gives them earning potential.
You have 5% more earning potential.
Okay. Sounds reasonable, and as Commissioner Heck asked, if that's the department director's, she's okay with that, and I'm fine too. Sounds good.
Okay. Shall we move this forward to next Wednesday? Or do you need it today?
Doesn't have to be today.
Okay. Can you be there to talk about these?
Yeah.
All right. Next Wednesday.
Admin,
okay.
I think it gives an opportunity to inform the public as to what we've done in regards to consolidating the departments.
Yeah.
And so also give them information as to kind of like a one-stop thing for the planning,
mm-hmm.
what we've endeavored to do. And I think it'll be a good opportunity for educating people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think the biggest thing is just that it's the problem that we have as a rural county is we don't have long-term strategic planning in our unincorporated space for infrastructure design. And cities do that. That's why they have community development in cities. But counties don't. And so this is a great opportunity to, you know, foster economic growth through long-term planning that really wasn't happening before. So, and I don't think the average folks really understand that, you know, the long-term plan that the board has had with this restructuring. So it's a great opportunity to give some information to them.
That's something that's been in process and goal of ours for this board for quite some time. And when I say quite some time, I think we've talked about it the last 4 years.
Yeah.
But we just needed to have the appropriate staffing and the ability to go forward and do it. So.
Well, and it really came out of that whole idea that we need these best practices put online. I mean, I'm discovering mm-hmm. this stuff from talking to, you know, the Klamath County and Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, this is how we do it. And I was like, had never thought that was even possible. It was like, well, of course cities do it, but why don't counties do it more often, especially of our size? It doesn't make sense when you've got larger Clackamas, Multnomah county-sized departments where they need to do specific functions. But for us, I think we're perfectly situated for this situation. Makes sense.
Move it forward.
All right.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Good luck with your negotiations today, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. United Community Action Network. We have Ms. Wessels. There you are.
In the past, we've taken DA's offices or elected officials' offices, but
that's up to you. I'll be happy to have a seat.
That's all right.
Shouldn't take this.
I know. This is a very short one. Okay, and this is the ESG acknowledgement.
Yes.
All right.
So ESG, Emergency Solutions Grant, is pass-through funding to community action agencies through Oregon Housing and Community Services. And HUD provides that funding to OHCS. It's been passed through to us to utilize for homeless prevention, rapid rehousing services that we coordinate throughout the county. And in alignment with our MGA, our master grant agreement that we have with OHCS coming up for 17-19, we need to have on record an acknowledgement from basically the local government that says, in fact, we're doing this activity. And so that's what this form is for. It's an acknowledgement that I have informed you that we do these activities, that we will continue to be doing them. This is funding that is direct to us, so there's no fiscal impact to this office or administration. But just to let you know that we're doing it, and we will continue to do so until we don't need to anymore.
Great.
Okay.
There is no expected date, but I am always hopeful. That is how I continue to get up and do what I do.
I see on the document here you have just my signature on it. Which we would need to, in any action, delegate, need to sign it. So
For the chair to sign.
I just didn't. I saw the document made up that way, and I just want to make sure.
No, it's designed that way.
Okay. All right. Very good. Any questions?
No, thank you.
No. And do you currently have this grant?
Yes, this funding.
And we've already done this before.
Yes, this is since the beginning of funding, it seems to me, or at least my 20-plus years in dealing with this funding.
I thought so. Okay. All right. We'll move this forward to our consent calendar then.
Generally speaking, it's every 2 years, and we wind up having to do this particular fund. One of the reasons that they want the acknowledgement is really so that our demonstrated relationship is on record.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we do have that relationship ongoing. So it's just a formality for the funding source to be taken care of.
Good.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good work. All right.
Pleasure to do.
Thank you, Ms. Wessels.
Thank you.
Okay, District 3. Good morning. How are you?
Sally Potter, she's with our recruiting assistant.
I was going to say, wait a minute, district attorney, wait a minute.
I've taken over up here. You haven't
been up there. District attorney's office. Okay. And did you state your name for the record?
Cecilia Hayes.
Sally Potter.
Sally Potter, thank you.
All right. This is a renewal of one of our Department of Justice Victim of Crime Act grants. This is a competitive grant that we had for a number of years. This year is going to be for a three-year period, so it will not expire until the end of 2019. The match in this grant is being met solely with costs that we are already expending. We're matching it with the post costs that we're already spending, prorated rental space over at the juvenile building, and administration costs. It funds a one FTE victim assistance specialist who works approximately 35% of her time over at juvenile and the rest of the time in the district attorney's office providing services to victims of crime. This is in our budget too.
Okay, this is a renewal of the VOCA grant, right?
VOCA competitive grant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we also
and has the amount changed or is it the same amount as last year?
It fluctuates. I don't recall exactly what it is. I know it is more in this cycle than it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like every cycle it goes up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Is that because it's based on fees? It seems to me that some of this is based on fees.
No. Volk is not based on
fees. It's not based on fees.
Fees. It's,
I mean, not fees for you, but through the state, through the legislature.
Well, that would be the criminal fines and assessments.
Mm-hmm, there you go.
Which we also
the word I was looking for.
We get funds from that source as well.
Okay.
We have grants for that too.
Mm-hmm.
This is dedicated funds for victim services.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
Nope.
All right. Very well. We will move this forward next Wednesday. I think we just put this on the admin. I mean, on the consent calendar as well.
Thank you.
Would you like to come over to speak to that, or would Sally?
So you need somebody there when it's on consent?
I think it would be a good idea if you were, so people would understand what it is.
Okay, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I actually read word of that deed. I'm not ashamed to admit I fell asleep three times.
Sleeping in here, did you say?
Not all glamorous.
Okay, we are. We have several things here. The first one. Order number 2016-061, in the matter of initiating the formation of a library district, pursuant to ORS 357 and, 216 to 286. All right. We're setting up our first public hearing today.
Yes, you are. And that's what the order is seeking to accomplish. You will, of course, vote on it next week. But establishing a district is far more involved and complex than sending a levy to a ballot. And so I just wanted to make that point, even though I think we've covered it in prior public meetings. So the order, and I don't happen to have them in front of me at the moment, but the order we seek to establish first required hearing, and that would be next Wednesday.
Just setting the date for the hearing, 25th.
Yes, the order would set the date for the hearing. Yeah, the order would set the date for the hearing. So this will continue to play out even after the first of the year.
Well, I was looking at this notice and setting a public hearing.
Notice.
I'm trying to find it.
There's no notice yet.
Public hearing on the proposed formation of the library district held at 9 o'clock on January 25th.
Yes.
That's the first hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. I just want to make sure I have the right date.
That is, yes. Yeah. And in order to, you'll notice that the order references the resolutions from the cities. And that's why we had to have the city resolution.
Right. Which they got both of those just last week, I think, didn't they?
That's right.
Okay. All right. We can move this forward to next week and for the admin next week.
And
now,
assuming that everything goes according to Hoyle next week, then what's the next step?
I think we'll do the hearing on the 25th. Or the board of commissioners.
So we need a subsequent meeting between the 25th and the swearing in the other board to ratify this decision to say yes, that's something that this next board wants to do. In my opinion.
Okay.
We'll talk about that on the 3rd.
Okay.
It'll be on the agenda.
Okay. Okay.
But this board needs to do. I'm asking a legal counsel. As far as we approve this, and as far as this board is concerned, that's all that is required from us. It goes on to the next board to do with whatever they're going to do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes. That's yes, the timeline would have it.
Yeah.
This is the last thing that needs to be done in December.
Right. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Yes. You speak to it.
That's what I was going to ask. Are you going to speak to that, or are you going to somebody from the library to speak to it?
Well, I think I can speak to it, but I think the library would be happy to speak to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they'd be, if the board wants
so
to invite them to come and talk.
Okay. Or notifying
Kate.
Okay. Next week.
Yeah.
All right. Resolution number 2016-076, in the matter of referring to Josephine County voters on May 2016th election, a measure for the renewal of the current local option tax for the animal shelter and animal control, and I presume that's why you're here today.
That is why Wally invited me. Just as a reminder, in May 2014, the Jefferson County voters passed a three-year local option tax levy of 8 cents per $1,000 assessed value to provide services for the animal shelter and animal control countywide. This measure expires on June 30th of 2017. The Animal Shelter Advisory Committee has forwarded a formal recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners and asked that you put this on the May ballot. This would maintain current levels of effort at the shelter. And it is not a, it's important that we want to make sure that people know this is not a new tax, it's just a continuation of an existing one.
Okay. Any questions? So if this is approved in May, the current one expires the end of June.
Correct.
They wouldn't run the assessment until November.
Correct.
So
there's no lag.
Pardon?
There's no lag. It'd be fine.
Right. So I just want to know, you have your budget already set, so you'd be setting the new budget based on the passage of that starting June 1st.
Yes.
Passes May. Right. Okay. We can move this one forward then. Any
so reviewing problem? The timeline, this isn't subject to the same 90-day referral request. It's not a request requirement of our charter. And so the timeline of this, of a levy, is different, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. And so there's no requirement of it getting out of this board right now. But being it referred from the county, I don't know if it's possible. It is possible for the next board to take a corrective action. I'm just saying it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying what they're going to do. So for me, I would defer this issue to the next board. I'm pretty sure this board is going to move it forward. So I just need to say that. I'm probably going to abstain because I don't think it's appropriate that this board make a decision that the other one would or may not endorse. I don't know. And the other thing was that the original thing, I support the animal control levy. I think that it's a good thing. It's necessary. It's a requirement of our charter. It's a policy decision that should be deferred to the next board. And the first levy was done as a citizen's referral. The nice thing about for levies is there is a very low threshold for citizen signature requirements. It's about 2,500 signatures or something like that. Maybe it's lower than that. I think it's closer to 2,000. So.
Commissioner Heck?
No, I'm fine with it.
Okay, we'll put it on the admin next week. And
I'll be there to speak to you.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you,
ma'am. Okay. Item 4C. Personal services agreement with Mall Foster and Longy for remedial plans and specifications for county building on A Street.
Yes. So Arthur had hoped to present this. He's far more steeped in the background on this issue. But he was unavailable today, and so I said, well, let's keep it moving. And thus I am here presenting the contract. And so the contract is for $101,000, and so... more than what I had thought yesterday. I was trying to recall what it was. $101,000 in total. And the description of what the contract does is really found in the two exhibits, which are intended to be paired together as a payment would go out at the completion of the tasks. So you've got three tasks, all of which pertaining to campus and the abatement project that's going on there. This does not cover the occupied portion of the Dimmock campus where public health is currently located. That would have been really, really expensive from what I gather. And so this is seeking to abate the portion that's already been raised. And it's a standard contract form. Yeah.
The abatement, do we have any idea what is there that might possibly need to be abated? I know that in conjunction with the Dimmock building, I mean, there's tanks in there and there's who knows whatever else in there. Is any of that what's covered by this $101,000?
In terms of what they're trying to abate?
Yeah.
Before I start talking, speculating, I would probably get back
to you. If we go to the tasks down here, task one, task two, and task three is the hazardous building materials, and we're talking about the 8th Street building, and then the removal and decommissioning of USTs in addition to the A Street building. That's all the stuff that's not in the building, that's next to it, and doing the soil samples, et cetera, and then preparing the abatement plan. So it's down there in the task that they're going to do. It has all to do with the A Street building and what's adjacent to it. And I don't know, Commissioner Hare, could you clarify if that's going to take care of for lack of a better word, kind of the conduits that have to do that go to building maintenance? Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that's what that was actually describing were those.
It's actually not going to cover those things. It's covering the survey.
But I thought that's what they were doing was a survey, the utility survey.
It's going to do a review of all of the potential abatement needs. Right. And so this isn't costing the county $101. It's misleading on the cover sheet. It's costing us $15,000. There's an $85,000 grant that's been appropriated through Business Oregon for this. Mm-hmm. And so this will be doing some abatement, but mostly an evaluation and a liaison contracting for the next round. And we're anticipating $250,000 in grant. That's the limit to do the, if there is a tank or soils that have been affected, the boiler room and all of the piping that's gutted.
And that's what's described in the task, too.
The lead-based paints. It should be so that the A Street building and all of the adjacents are able to be deconstructed, demolished very cheaply. That's exactly what they did with the Demick Tower. They abated everything before they took it down.
Right.
And so this is abating it, but it's not taking it down because there could be a residual value for the next developer.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
up to them. But this would have to be done.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Commissioner? So this is not a decision you're asking to be deferred to the next board?
No, this is actually an extension of the original agreement with Moll Foster, basically with Business Oregon. So this isn't a new policy. This isn't a change of anything. This was always the plan to remediate the entire campus, which will be the inhabited portions will come next when we've moved public health to their facility. And it's part of a plan. And so it's not a new policy.
Okay, shall we move this forward to the admin next week?
It might even be construed as a consent calendar item because it is an existing plan. It's
we didn't have the 101,000 expenditure, so we'll do that. Pardon me, my computer's been on a little thing here. Let me work on
it. I believe this allocation of 15 was in the budget. It's not an additional budget requirement. So it's up to you, but it's not a change in anything.
Just keep smiling.
If it were,
it's been acting up this morning.
It
has a new download, and it's not wanting to work
another
right.
Contractor
and there it goes.
We're going with Moll Foster as an extension of the existing agreement with them. So.
Well, I think it'll be an opportunity for you to address it next
sure.
week. So.
Happy to do so.
Admin or consent, though?
Doesn't matter to me.
Okay, let's put it on the admin. All right. Anything else, legal counsel?
That was fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll tell Arthur you did a fine job.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, because
it's
so late.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it would be 11.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. We are going to move on to department business. And the first one of the department business we have airports. This is the return of the proposal from last week.
Good morning.
Ms. Graves.
How's everybody?
Doing big.
Good.
Right.
So last week the new commissioners had asked that I bring some additional information regarding expenditures and a little bit more detail or broken down and I had requested, and I'm not sure if you have, I brought some hard copies of the five-year capital outlay sheet here, but I've made some additions to reflect the...
thank you.
Residents, the caretakers' residences at both airports, actually, because the one at the Grants Pass Airport is in a equal state of disrepair. Anyway, you know, we're faced with a situation where for decades and for many, many people before me, the right thing just wasn't done. And I'm at the point where I feel we need to step up and do the right thing and provide a decent home for the caretaker, which can be used as an airport office at any point in the future, and will in fact serve as accommodation residence and airport office. So we're looking at $79,900 for the home plus $25,000 for the site prep. And I've thrown in an additional $10,000 for awnings to make sure that the west and the south sides of the new building are protected from the sun and the wind and the rain and the incoming storms. And those are the two sides of the existing residence that show the most damage from exposure. The professional inspection report I received last night, and it is it's pretty definitive. The home's in terrible shape, and it's going to take virtually every subsystem in the home is damaged and needs to be either repaired, remediated, or replaced. And the question is, you know, what does it cost on a per square foot basis to do that? And I actually am of the opinion, and I think it's pretty well supported by this inspection report, you can infer that there will be costs far in advance or above what the modular or the pre-manufactured home is going to cost us. Plus, you'd have the added issue of logistics. What do we do with the family while the house is being, you know, remediated or torn down and replaced, or, you know, whatever the decision would be based on probably a dozen separate contractor bids that we would need to obtain. So, once again, as I recommended last week and last August, I strongly recommend that we do everything we can to get the caretaker and his family out of that house. And the quickest and most cost-efficient way of doing that is to bring in this Palm Harbor home, which, if you walk into the home, you cannot tell it's not a stick-built home. It's, meets current code. It's 6-inch thick walls, double pane windows. It's R42 insulation, top and bottom and sides, and very efficient and nice looking, actually. So I would ask that you examine all the evidence here and then move this forward to next week's business session. And of course, I'm happy to answer any further questions you might have.
The report that you got from the inspector, mm-hmm. Do you have copies of that today?
I do, and I have emailed those to you as well as...
Oh, hard copy. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
And there's two reports. There's a three-pager summary, and then there's a four-page, rather. No, mm-hmm. It's three, thick paper. Yeah, 36-page right. Document, so...
For me, this project has multiple challenges. You and I sit down a couple of days ago, I guess, I don't know what day it was, and talked about this and how it integrates. Thanks for providing us an update of the five-year plan. The long-term ask that your department's going to have, we've talked about the potential solutions to that, and I think they're going to be really, really good. For me, this one is, as we boil it down to things, there's some elements in here that are standard maintenance things in the report. that could have been addressed, like in the last 6 months, however long you've had this person there, as far as good default systems and leaky roofs and stuff.
Well, there was quite a bit of stuff that was addressed starting 5 years ago when I first came on board.
Yeah,
thousands of dollars worth of repairs.
Sounds like there's a lot of stuff.
They've been trying to keep up with it. It goes as bad as fast as you can fix it.
Well, the water heater was replaced on my watch. The kitchen sink's been replaced on my watch. I mean, all these things that I replaced 5 years ago are now exhibiting
challenges.
Right, right. So if the issue is, you know, let's fix the drippy faucets and fix the drippy shower tub, that kind of thing, it's sort of like moving the chairs around on the Titanic.
For me, it's the perspective that you have somebody in that house who's, maybe it's like the mechanic's car that never runs quite right because he never gets around to that or something like that. That's the situation that I don't want to, you know, but
no, it's fine. And he's easily capable of making those repairs.
Yeah.
And he has. When I talked to him, when I went out there and went through the house, he showed us. I mean, he's tried to replace the drains underneath, and he's actually gone in and removed mold and tried to seal it stop it. He's done and repaired the ceiling and when it comes to the leaky roof, the roof that was installed on there before Mr. Graves was there was installed improperly. And so trying to fix the leaks, it doesn't work when it's installed improperly, which directs the water underneath. So it's just a situation where the entire roof and all the sheeting would have to be removed. But
was Ryan
to correct that leaking.
Get out there for this?
No, he wasn't. I sent him a copy of the report, and he emailed me later that morning and said I wasn't able to make it out for the inspection. And, but please send me a copy of the report. So as soon as I got this last night, I sent that out.
Great.
So Ryan has it,
yeah.
And the commissioners have that report. And I also provided a copy of the report to the smoke jumpers.
Definitely a need to do something. I get that, and I'm actually sorry that this has taken since August to kind of get in front of the board in December. That's a long time for something that should be construed as an emergency, so to speak, that we're not going to solve this problem tomorrow. It takes 3 months to put in a new, like you said, 2 to 3 months to do a new.
Right. Well, from the time that we order the home, you know, they say 2 to 3 months for delivery.
Yeah.
By that time, the site prep will be completed, and it's just a matter of a few days once the home is available to pick up for it to be transported down to the site and then installed and ready for occupancy. So I'm hoping to have the whole situation resolved by, you know, by March at the latest, and I think that the sooner we can move on this, the better.
Yeah.
I think that This is kind of the off season for doing this kind of thing, so I don't think that you're going to run into as many glitches as if we waited till spring or summer when everybody's wanting
true,
to
true. There are do this contractors sort of available, so
there's contractors available.
Yeah.
Okay. The challenge is doing excavation foundation work at the time of year is not exactly the most ideal time. You can't dig a post hole without it filling up with water, so
very true.
I think what's encouraging about that site, if you've looked at it, is that we're siding the new home, where the current home is, it kind of grades up a little bit. And I don't know if it goes up as much as a foot, but it does grade up a little bit, which I think will be also an advantage.
Right. I mean, it's in an area where standing water does not
accumulate. It does not stand.
Right, right. And it does tend to run downhill. And it has that, you know, half inch or one inch slope per foot in that area. Now, you know, he'll be leveling that out and then creating a downslope on all four sides per code. And the whole thing is going to be mounted on a foundation and posts and pilings and the cement piers, et cetera. So,
it's
a permanent installation.
He's talking with Arthur about the fiscal wherewithal within your department, not to pay this back, but to actually keep the current staffing level at IV after the expiration of the grant dollars from economic development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's interpretations out there that money is already expired. The agreement was the remainder of the year, an additional year, and we're in year two and a half, I think,
Well, we're in the second year, so we're about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And
technically, it could expire at the end of December. And I'm not sure if your budget can handle, you know, the additional financial burden of that staff or without grants. And that would be my concern, that you have a payment plan of 20 years. You have infrastructure you're putting in for 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the financials that I can see, and maybe it's just a reappropriation of money within your budget, but that's going to be a challenge. That's the challenge for me.
Yeah.
How do you justify?
Well, let me address that for a moment.
The house is definitely in disrepair. I'm not denying any of that. It's a good deal on a great manufactured home.
Yeah.
It's just that hurdle of when push comes to shove, are you going to have...
Yeah. Well, a couple of things about that. I've never proposed this, but there are counties in the state of Oregon, and this is allowed by the ORSs, et cetera, that fund their entire airport operation completely with economic development money.
Yeah.
And despite that, I'm not counting on any of that going forward. Traditionally, I think the commissioners have allotted or allocated $30,000 to the Illinois Valley Airport, and that's been on a...
Airports in general.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So the airports department, and we've focused on putting it to use at the Illinois Valley Airport for the reasons that it is, doesn't support itself in terms of operations, or hasn't in the past. What you're seeing in the budget, of course, is the reality of the revenues that come in. But what you don't see in the budget are the lease renewals and the expanded leases that we've had and that we are putting in place. We've had leases that have been expiring since 2013 that mm-hmm. were 20-year leases done at a development rate. We have more leases in place at that airport and at both airports.
Yeah.
I am confident that the airports department will be able to sustain its current staffing level of 4 FTEs going forward without any economic development money at all. But I would also add that it's money well spent. Should the commissioners decide to continue doing that, it's easily justifiable, as is, for example, match money, which... You know, for matching grants, we get these 90% grants, and we're getting millions of dollars worth of really high-grade infrastructure that is going to increase Josephine County's ability to conduct business and effect commerce. And you're buying that at 10 cents on the dollar.
Right.
It's amazing. It's an amazing deal. And I would encourage you to... And Julie, when I have opportunities to sit and talk with her about this... to consider that really closely and consider not only continuing to make those economic development contributions and not necessarily focus on the fact that, well, you have to have these, otherwise you can't sustain your staff. We need to be able to sustain staff. We need to be able to sustain and find matching funds for these grants, et cetera. So I laud you all for providing economic development money to the airports department, and I think it's easily justifiable and defendable as money well spent.
I think you need revenue. Where we come up with it, that's up to us. But I'm exploring other options that wouldn't do, because you have options that other things don't.
Correct. Now, of course, I can't charge a passenger head tax or anything on tickets or something.
Economic development for things that don't have that opportunity we've talked about.
So I'm very hopeful that in my discussions with Dutch Bros, they've expressed an interest in the Kairos facility out there.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I know Michael Walker's been working with a couple of other groups that have expressed an interest out there, and that will generate significant revenue for the airports department going forward. If the U.S. Forest Service can ever get its act together, which I doubt, we stand to renew their lease at the Grants Pass Airport for their interagency fire center and the Siskiyou Rappel Base at probably $45,000 to $50,000 a year, which we have never received. We received $1 for 65 years of lease. So,
and Larry's been working on negotiating that now for more than 2.5 years. And
yeah, it's frustrating because I begin the negotiations over again with a new staff every year up at the Portland office of the Forest Service. So, I'm getting good at educating them and where we stand and the importance of getting it done, et cetera. So, you know, there are bright spots of potential revenue that I think are very likely to happen. And I'm not giving up on my attempts to get commercial activity in at the Illinois Valley Airport, which has the potential of generating quite a bit of revenue. So it isn't a dismal forecast by any means
for
the airports.
Well, I think one of the things, too, you didn't mention is that the revenues of the airports due to the improvements, the leases and the increase in fuel sales, which has been phenomenal, the revenues have been going up 15% a year. So based just on the fact that he's one of the few departments that can generate his own revenue, that I think that will continue. So I think
the cost-benefit analysis of putting something money into infrastructure that doesn't return a revenue and matching grants at 10%, which allocate offer you opportunities to generate more revenue.
Well, it may not
I'm not so sure of the need. I can't get my head around the fact that there's a need for a full-time maintenance person at the Ivy Airport, in addition to the 40 hours a month that are contributed in lieu of a rent payment for this facility. That's really tough for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I have Sarah, our parks manager in the back, who's managing 13 parks with a campus space that's huge with a handful of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a struggle for me. And I don't want to get down into all the details. This is your proposal,
mm-hmm.
and you're asking for property reserve money to for me. You also didn't, that isn't something, but that was an inherited element for you. It's just challenging for me to get my head around it. This is the best allocation of the limited dollars that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, sometimes you have to, in business, you have to look at, which airport to me is business, you have to look at not the direct return from selling fuel or selling lease space or merchandise or whatever. When you have ancillary structures like a caretaker's house, you need that person there that provides the maintenance of the grounds, that provides the safety aspects of keeping the weeds down, keeping the rocks off the things.
So from a business perspective, I wouldn't have somebody there. I would contract that out. That's a done deal.
Well, you have
that's
to have
$10 an hour.
You have to have someone there because that airport, prior to
security
having someone on there, security was a problem. But now that he's been there, security has been resolved.
On a security element,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you can avoid that conversation. And it
right.
isn't satisfied by that is probably the number one deal. Like, there really isn't much of a discussion otherwise. Your potential liability of not having somebody there, how much infrastructure is at stake, and how much damage somebody can do before Concierge Home and Business Watch has a chance to make it out there is hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, Concierge Home and Business Watch isn't going to help much, even if you have an active bad guy out
right.
there doing stuff. And, you know, before Jason came out, even
there
when we had a volunteer caretaker living at the house, we were being hit. The Smoke Jumper complex was being vandalized and broken into on a regular basis. I could have put together a list of, you know, happy, fluffy, rainbow, unicorn reasons why we need to do all this and security at the airport. But coming from me, it's automatically disingenuous and self-serving. So I suggest that we get the users of the airport to perhaps sound off on why they think a caretaker ought to be there on a full-time basis.
I don't need that. See, because
I think to have a $10 an hour person,
That's not an argument. That's what I already said. That is undisputable, the fact that we need somebody there. Now, how we get there is, so we're putting $150,000 into another building, and then you're going to have to spend another $100,000.
Well, two buildings actually. Yeah, I have some work
on
in this allocation on our maintenance facility.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I'm talking about
doing
something with the house. Are we just going to tear it down? Are we actually going to fix it up? Or that's going to cost money too.
Right.
And
I've got some money in there. For
you've done the evaluation that says it's cost benefit to getting an RV and putting the family in an RV for 3 months while we spend the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to get the other thing. The other house fixed up.
Mm-hmm. It's more than $150,000 to get that house fixed up without dispute. Perhaps $200,000. And then we have a house that looks old, just the way this one looks, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, with this report, with the potential for asbestos and mold remediation, and every system, I mean, from the roof to the three chimneys that need to be removed.
None of the chimneys work.
You know,
it's not true. The report says that
the one chimney that they're using with a wood stove.
What's said to be absolutely accurate here.
Yeah.
What about a used double wide? Has that been explored?
Yeah, it has. In fact, we come across used double wides on a quite frequent basis and come into ownership. And I think if you check with Ryan, you'll find.
No, I know we've explored that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about out in the marketplace, not what we foreclose on, because I've been the champion of, can we use any of these things?
Well, I think a used double wide is going to require the same level of site prep, so that'll be, $25,000. But if we paid, say, $40,000 for a used double wide, it's going to look like a used double wide, okay? It's not going to look like a pre-manufactured home, mm-hmm. which actually looks like a home.
Right.
And we'll save $40,000, which I think in the big picture here is probably not as significant and not much of a trade-off.
Your repayment schedule is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and I'm actually paying a little bit of interest because I understand that there's an opportunity cost to spending this money up front and not having it available in the property reserve fund for opportunities that may come along where the county wants to act right away.
Yeah.
So I am tying up funds for this length of time, but I'm very confident that myself, my successor, will easily be able to make these payments and pay back the full amount. Even if we had a current level of revenue, which I expect is going to continue to go up.
Okay, I'm comfortable from the standpoint that even if you couldn't afford this person from a salary perspective, mm-hmm. you could rent this out. I know that the Illinois Valley has a real challenge, so there isn't any question of your payback period.
Right.
That's definitely doable. And your payback accommodates all of your requests?
Yes.
So the $50,000 in addition or
so? Yeah, my payback request is $155,000.
The deck, the driveway, all of that.
Yeah, and the repairs to the maintenance facility, what we call the warehouse out there.
Okay.
Yep, we need to replace there's no electrical system out there. It needs to be
I wish I would have gotten to that point earlier in my mind that you're not going to default on this.
Nope.
The real estate market in the Illinois Valley, you can't find a place to rent. You're going to find a revenue stream to pay this back.
And sure, something
can. Yeah, the whole thing. Yes. That would have been a lot easier in this argument. Just to make sure that everything's going to line up for your predecessor, whoever comes out. I mean, your
successor.
My predecessor.
And he has not tended the resignation, by the way.
Predecessor is something you're having to deal with. This.
Okay.
Okay, great. Moving forward.
Admin.
So WBS then? Next
yes.
Excellent.
And the admin next week.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Sorry to put you through all that.
Yeah, Larry will be there.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Transit. We have. Scott.
Morning.
Good morning. And this is agreement number 31578 with Josephine County and ODOT.
That is correct. This is an agreement. This is a planning grant that ODOT wanted me to ask for. So I did. And what essentially it is to look at how to improve the transit system. A lot of agencies, large urban areas, are looking into transit network companies. You've probably heard of it, TNC by the name of Uber, Lyft, that kind of thing. So what would those agencies look like in a small urban/rural area like we have here?
So this is different than your transit master plan?
This is different than the transit master plan.
Well, aren't you doing a plan?
This is specific to this actual issue. Now, when I look at this, obviously Uber's not about to come into town. But what
eventually,
we're looking at, eventually,
Southern Oregon.
eventually it will be here. So the idea was is to get ahead of this because there's a lot of issues with agencies that have entered into agreements already with these TNCs that they're running into, and the FTA just basically came out with a, it's not a guidance, but it's more of a list of questions. And some of those questions are, how do you deal with your drug and alcohol testing requirements? If a private company is providing service for you, how do you deal with insurance? How do you deal with your capital improvement program? You have to report back on that. And the main thing is also accessibility, because if you offer an on-demand type of service to someone that only has, that you access it through a computer or a smartphone or a smart device, what about people that don't have access to those? So essentially it becomes an ADA issue. So that's what this grant is going to look at. It will be hiring a private consultant that will explore all these opportunities and flush all these things out. I could probably sit down and flush them all out if I had the time and, and this is the only thing I was working on, but it's not. The other aspect of this, and this is something that didn't get put into, well, it's in there, but it doesn't get stressed a lot, is what if we were the TNC? What if Josephine County was the TNC? Because there's, I had already come before you with a grant agreement for AVLs, or automatic vehicle locating systems and stop announcement systems, that kind of thing. The first part of that AVL, that's essentially the linchpin is with all these TNCs. It's knowing where your vehicles are at and being able to communicate with them directly, immediately, in real time. Well, those AVL systems have that built into them. So, and we're going through that process now. So what would that look like if it was us? If we had the vehicles, if we had them out there and we're doing shared ride on demand. The other aspect of that is in support of the transit system. It's ultimately what we're trying to bridge the gap. This is called first mile, last mile. First mile is the first mile to get to the transit system. The last mile is once you're on the transit system to get to your final destination. So that's a barrier within our system. Obviously, we operate in a rural and urban area, so we can't be everywhere.
It's challenging.
It is very challenging. So that's the other aspect of that. So when ODOT was looking at this and was helping me develop this, they were looking at it from the pure perspective of what would it look like if the TNC came to town and how would we incorporate our services with them, which is one of the things that the FDA has asked us to do. I look at it as not only that if the TNC came to town, but what if some other agency, including us, became the TNC on a limited basis to provide that first mile, last mile solution to our transit users. So that's what this grant's going to do. What it will come up with is just a plan. A plan to say, okay, this is the funding that would be needed if you were going to embark on this. These are the issues that you're going to run into. Here's how you get through those issues. And here's basically the organizational structure that would this would encompass if it was put into place. They're not here yet. They will be here. The other unique thing is we are an urban area by 200 people.
Yeah.
But with, and as long as you include other
Right, exactly. Two other cities in a different county. Yeah. The other part of this is we're also very rural. So that's why ODOT approached me with this, is because we're in a very unique situation where we're urban / rural, and we're kind of right in the middle, and this could be served. They're looking at this as a blueprint for the rest of the state, the rest of the other urban agencies out there, small urban agencies. I think there's six of us, seven of us, and then there's another 34 rural agencies. And so how would this look in those areas? For example, Roseburg has a pretty dynamic dial-a-ride system that they open to the general public. They're very interested in seeing how this works out, how they can incorporate it into their system there, how they can get more people into their system, that kind of thing, and how to improve it in terms of, in real time, if somebody's booking a ride, what does that look like? So in a nutshell, that's what it is. It's in our current budget. The local match is almost $12,000, or it's $11,500. They're about, it'll get done within, I think the timeline was to get it done by, I don't think it was July. January is when I would probably look to start it. And, yeah, ended about this time.
June 30th.
Yeah. And 2018 probably is when we get a final report. So I think that's doable. It's not going to take a lot of our time. I'll basically oversee the project. I'll make sure that our interests are met. When it's not just talking about a TNC or a private company doing this, that it's also looked at as maybe it's not even us. Maybe it's some other public agency out there that would be interested in taking this kind of thing on, or a combination. If you look around, there's a lot of other agencies out there, public agencies, that have a fleet of vehicles. Southern Oregon Aspire is one, or Options of Southern Oregon is another. They have 30, 40 vehicles.
All Care?
Yeah, All Care is another one. So how we all have vehicles out there. How could we better utilize all of our vehicles? Or, well, let's explore that. Or if someone else came into town, a private company that was a TNC, what would they look like as well? So I'm not just limiting myself to, well, how do we deal with Uber or Lyft? I'm looking at how do we utilize everyone's vehicles that are out there, and is it possible, and what would it look like? What would those arrangements look like? So that's essentially what this agreement is for.
Okay. All right.
Is it covering your 10% cost?
Yeah, my labor seems to be extremely cheap. But yes, it will cover that.
You think they'd pay us to cut down the 10% on it, 5% or something?
There is the money in this is specifically for the consultant. Obviously, I'm coming up with the local match, but I think the value to us as an organization or as a community definitely outweighs that. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't looking at just making sure my costs were covered.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's some significant benefits that we could garner from this.
If it works out like you anticipated.
Yeah, if it works out like I... Or here's the thing, is even if it doesn't work out like I anticipated, we could say, and we looked at that, it's a ridiculous idea. At least we'll know that at that point, because it's something that everyone kind of keeps talking about in the back of their minds, and it's just like no one really has an answer yet.
Mm-hmm.
As to, is this going to work? Is this not going to work?
Okay.
Well, I mean, whoever thought Uber would be a term of known term and a received as a functional operation term.
Right,
even 5 years ago. This is amazing.
Well, a lot of the younger people use it. I know my grandkids use it all the time. My granddaughter flew from Denver to Portland last week with her girlfriend, and my daughter didn't have a car to go get him, so they just called Uber. And as it turns out, there's an Uber driver that lives across the street, but that's how they get around. They don't call a taxi or wait for a taxi or anything. They all call Uber. They go.
They don't call Uber.
I know, that's what I just said call, but call upon them to come get them.
Yeah.
So it's like, really? You know, and they don't stand at a taxi stand or make a phone call to the bus service or anything. What's your schedule? Because when you fly in, you don't know the bus schedule.
Exactly,
so
right.
Mm-hmm. You just get on and pull up the app on here and just do it.
It's very convenient for some people, and right now the question is just how does that integrate with the existing transit system?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't look at it as some... look at it as a threat, as a conflict of it's interfering with their ability to provide service. I don't look at it like that. I look at it as just another tool that we utilize to make us better.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
All right. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'm very interested.
Okay. Should we move this forward then to the admin next week?
Wednesday.
Nine.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Forestry.
Morning.
Good morning. You've been here a long time, Dave. I saw you out in the hall this morning. All right. This is Hungry Hill Hardwood sale contract.
Yes, I'm looking for...
This is a modification, though. It's not the original contract.
Correct. Yeah. Modification number 3 to that existing contract. And through the course of trying to close the sale out, I came up with 3 issues that weren't included in the original contract or modifications 1 and 2. And those 3 issues are: the original contract was a lump sum contract for hardwoods, and the purchaser had paid for those, but through modification number 1 and 2, when the contract was expanded to cover salvage operations after the fire, additional hardwoods were not addressed. So basically this says, the agreement that the purchaser had with my predecessor for payment of those additional hardwoods, which is about $5,600 revenue to the county that he's paid, even though wasn't addressed in the subsequent amendments to the contract. The other issue is the contract modification number one extended the contract to December 31st of 14, and it was never extended beyond that. And he finished the contract in the spring of this year. So it's to cover an extension of time to cover when he was actually on the sale. And then the third issue is the original sale area was never modified to add on the additional areas that he harvested.
So it's
just a document, you know, hey, this was your original contract, and it was amended to cover these additional areas that you ended up harvesting. Primarily the two and three issues are just CYAs to get the contract all in order and be able to close it out.
Yeah. Okay. May I recommend that we just approve this today since it's...
I'd make a motion to such effect.
Second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, I have a motion and a second.
Thanks for
any further questions, Mr. Streeter?
No, it's just the clarification that this is something the board has recommended for modification of the policy so that he and I can do these kinds of things. I mean, it's less than $10,000. It's not big of a deal.
Yeah.
We really thank you for doing this today. It's just...
Yeah. Okay, roll call.
Commissioner Harris?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. We'll sign that thing today.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, nice tree.
Thank you. Commissioner Hare is going to do it next year because he's going to be here. You can do the tree up. No.
I don't.
Oh.
I'm not the decorations,
it's the tree itself.
Yeah.
Well, it is a nice tree. There's three nice trees. That one, this one, and the one in finance.
I wonder where you got them.
County Forestry, those beautiful trees.
We should sell those to the city. Has a couple of trees that they paid way too much for.
Yes. We gotta do that. That's a good idea.
Right? I was over there and I was like, where do you guys get your trees? Well, you've got some, we'll sell you cheap. Not, same rate, but... They're really pretty trees, but they're obviously store-bought.
Well, ours are fresh trees right out of
really,
our county
really
forest.
Nice.
They're very nice.
So.
Okay, parks.
Homegrown.
Personal services contract. And today we have Ms. Wright.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great.
Good.
Good. We are here finally. This is a long-awaited one for me, the White Horse Engineering contract. We went to bid several months ago, got proposals from different companies, and chose Auslin Group to move forward with the master plan. So before we had 100% concept plan for entire White Horse, which, to remind you, has never really seen infrastructure update since it was acquired back in the 50s, 60s. So long overdue for this location. At their first comeback with their proposal and price and what they had to do, it came out to around $150,000 to have shovel-ready plans for the entire park. In order to get it down to something that I can afford, we have agreed on a contract that is just about $50,500. And what that entails is shovel-ready 100% plans for the upper phase of White Horse, in which tent sites are going to be reconstructed into RV sites, and the roads will be designed in which large vehicles, of course, can navigate that, and then the rest of the park will be developed to 30% so that it can certainly all work together in the end, but the rest will be held off for a future contract as money allows, of course, as grants and our situation financially improves. A majority of the cost is going to be a wetland study and mitigation. So unless we're touching that bottom portion, that's where the majority of the money is going to be coming in.
Okay.
So this is really important for you to go out and have grants. We did an initial design, which the board has seen. I think we've got a copy of it there. I think it's been tweaked a little bit to accommodate more of the vehicles, and more parking was an element that wasn't really proposed in this. And I thought was one of the bigger shortcomings is, like, you got to have parking for like an extra vehicle or two for every spot or something like that. There's some sort of formula.
Well, lots of times these people are towing one behind them, so they have to have space for that.
And then somebody that comes to visit them in the park, they're here kind of probably because they know somebody, and then to accommodate all of that. So anyway, I think this is great. She's got money in her budget from the property sales, which is going to be used as the match to do this. This is going to be, are you going to have to vacate, you're not going to have to vacate the rest of the park in order to accommodate this. So it'll be open for most of the construction time?
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. We can still function with the entire bottom portion of the park, while the top one has the entire bathroom ripped out, all the roads redone, and, of course, limit construction hours to make sure it doesn't affect overnight, which they wouldn't be working through the night anyway with this project. So certainly we'll be held open. And on a note, as far as usability with this park, it's our last camping park as far as overnight stays. I think the only one less than this is Wolf Creek, which, of course, just also needs major improvements. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think even Innis Riffle had more overnight stays than Whitehorse. So that, to put that in perspective, really? This has huge potential.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Well,
Innis Riffle's a pretty cool spot. But
yeah. It is cool, but no amenities.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, this is really great. And thanks for getting it down to a workable number, 150. We both had sticker shock when we saw that. Because we did already invest $25,000, I think, or $20,000 in that design feature. So it's like, you know, how much can we spend on design before? When we're out of money, we don't have any money for construction. But I think this is going to be great. What's the time frame on when they're done with this?
But they're ready to start immediately. I've just been waiting for this, of course, the contract to be drafted, that sort of thing. And then they originally projected to have the plans completely ready by May. And so now that's pushed out probably till July or so.
Okay. But you're going to be able to apply for development grants?
Yes, I'm going to go back and apply for the same grant I did last year. I feel like the reason we didn't get that grant last year, which I think was $150,000 or something I had applied for, is because we didn't have shovel-ready plans. And they were right. Had they have given that to me,
you wouldn't have been able to use it anyway.
We're still on this timeline, so they made a good decision on their part, and we'll be prepared to go back and make sure we can stick to our timelines.
Great.
Okay, we'll move this forward to admin next Wednesday. You'll be able to be there?
Yes.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
That's the kind of tangible stuff that you can go, people, it is getting better.
Yeah, they can see the difference, and that's huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It just takes so
I asked for your office to send me a park pass application. Do they send those by email?
I emailed it out to you.
Thank you. Yes. Well, my computer was downloading upgrades, so thank you.
Just park passes down in the Treasury's office.
You can at Treasury as well, and I actually have spoken to Treasury, and you're more than welcome to go down there and pay cash.
So you don't have to do the interagency for the courthouse, but everybody.
You don't have to. Yeah, our purpose is just make sure it's one discount per employee.
Yeah. That's true. You can go here and go there.
I have faith in new employees. We'll do about it later.
Thank you. Okay, other business. Any other business the board we need to bring up before we move into the board? Okay, board business. Order number 2016-060 in the matter of the regular weekly business meeting of the Board of County Commissioners for the week of December the 26th. Basically, no quorums.
No secretarial staff. Right?
Pardon?
No secretarial staff.
If they're not here, there's a quorum, does it really...
Doesn't matter.
No board quorum will exist for the period of December 26th to December 30th. The weekly business session says that the Board of Commissioners will not hold a weekly business session during that week. So, all right. Much holiday celebration. So we'll move that one forward.
Consent.
And then this is the reappointment to the Fair Board, which is Dennis Harmon. Seems like we just appointed him.
3 years flies.
Three years flies.
No way.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, we just appointed Dennis Harmon.
That was his first term.
Now we're reappointing him, so we'll move that one forward to consent as also. Unless there's any objection, I don't think so. And the reappointment to the Transportation Advisory Committee, and that is, since I don't do that. That is Corey Ebenhack, Artie Berkmeyer, and Gail Renius, and Randy Samuelson.
They're all really interesting last names.
That's through 2020.
Yes. Run those off then.
The other one I don't know.
Corey Ebenhack. I don't know who that is. The other three I know.
Okay.
Well, I'm talking about personal.
No, I mean, it's not mine, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, we will have an executive session at 11 a.m. as just a reminder, so don't leave and run to lunch. 11 o'clock this morning. Right now it is 10:14. So being that there's no further business on this board, unless you have something you wish to bring up at this time?
No.
All right. We are adjourned at 10:14.
You need the recorder and leave your agenda sheet.
Just want me to pause it?
No.
Stop.